Now, with due consideration to my brethren, 15 or 20 minutes at the most will do for my message. So I'd like to read with you, please, Matthew 16, first of all. Matthew 16, please. And verse. And the background is the Mount of Transfiguration. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" The mountain in relation to location. Verse 16. And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." The mountain in relation to revelation. 17, please. Verse 1. After 6 days, the mountain in relation to dispensation. So, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart. The mountain in relation to elevation. Verse 2, he was transfigured before them. His face did shine as the sun, his raiment was white as light. The mountain in relation to transfiguration. Now please, let's read verse 3. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elias talking with him. The mountain in relation to communication as well as verification. God bless to us the reading of his precious word. The mountain in relation to location. Now, in the Gospels and Acts, you have Caesarea mentioned, which is a town on the Mediterranean. This is different. This is Caesarea Philippi, which lies due south of Mount Hermon. As far as Joshua chapter 12 is concerned, and 1 Samuel, it was the northernmost border of Israel given to the tribal allotment. That is, in basic, simple language, we symbolize it, we'll spiritualize it. You cannot go beyond it. Dear young brethren and sisters, first lesson, recognize you cannot get beyond Christ. That's the idea. It is the mountain that, according to Psalm 133, was the mountain of fellowship. The mountain that the writer, whoever he was, tells you of, brethren that dwell together in unity. You cannot get beyond Christ as to experience. Oh, dear brothers and sisters, recognize that as far as Paul is concerned, as soon as he became converted, Christ was both purpose and goal in the whole circumference of his life. You know, when I listened to the gospel, as a 20-year-old in the city of Toronto, being a total outsider, never having heard it before in all its simplicity and all its purity, I came to this conclusion. As these brethren, both the local men as well as in a special series of meetings, these dear brethren preach the gospel, and not only the gospel of the grace of God in relation to salvation. For see, I believe the gospel of the grace of God includes more. The purposes of God. Discipleship. And as I listen to these men preach, bringing before me the claims of Christ, the ultimate purposes of God, I came to this conclusion. I said, if, and in my life at that time there was an if what these brethren say is true, and if ever what they talk about will be mine, ultimately it could never be the same. I recognize that. I recognize that. Now, Paul grasped it. Receiving Christ as a Savior in the Damascus Turnpike, Paul recognized he could never be the same. A few years later, writing to the Philippians, he laid down his whole life's work, his whole motive. And he says, for me to live is Christ. It was the goal, the whole circumference of his living. Come on, how about you? What's life for you? What is it? Pleasing self? Going for this and that? Oh, recognize that the truest fulfillment in life, the real goal, I know you have to make a living. The real goal in life, the truest purpose, oh, if I could impress young people with this and do nothing more than this. True fulfillment in life, spiritual goal and purpose is Christ. You cannot get beyond it, whatever you do. You folks run hither and yon. They try this and that. For centuries, God has the answer for all mankind, and they miss it. How sad. Oh, you dear young people, in light of eternity, don't miss God's purpose for you. The mountain in relation to location. Now the mountain in relation to revelation. Well, that's good. Here's Peter, and like the others, they've been watching Christ, and they were with him for many months. Ultimately, it comes to the crisis in the life when in Caesarea Philippi, which, by the way, is just at the foot of Mount Hermon, seven springs come from Mount Hermon, crystal clear, as cool as can be. What a lovely scene. And here's the Savior, and he asked them, who do you think I am? And experimentally, what Peter had gathered for the last several months or so all of a sudden came forth in a clear-cut confession. It was a matter of divine revelation. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Oh, that was revelation. But, brethren, revelation in relation to salvation is just the start, isn't it? It's just the goal. It's not the goal. It's just the door through which you go in. Tell me, like Peter, have you had experiences with Christ on the mountaintop? Now I'll come to that in just a little while. Salvation is just the start. Like Peter, experiences with Christ along life. Tell me, have you ever asked God to lead and to guide you? Have you ever asked God to show you something? To help you in gospel testimony? Come on, you young folks. Have you ever seen God at work in your life? You see, it's one thing to be saved. It's another thing to experimentally know God. Here is Peter. I come to that in just a little while. He could never forget the scene. You see, experiences with Christ, no matter where it is, will strengthen you, will bring you deep confidence. Experiences like Peter on the mountain or anywhere else will bring about such necessary maturity. Don't remain a spiritual baby, please. You're wasting your time. The mountain in relation to elevation. You know, Mount Hermon, I have no difficulty finding out that this was actually Mount Hermon. Can easily be climbed within about 3 or 4 hours from the time where Peter, from the moment or the place where Peter confessed Christ as Lord. Now, as most of you know, I come from Europe. Not far from where we live were the Swiss Alps. One day, I went up 14,000 feet on the Alpine Massif. I'll describe the scene. Well, first of all, there was a silence that could be felt. The noise of the cities, the noise of the freeway, even the chirping of the birds thousands of feet below me. There was a silence, there was a total absence of noise that was almost heavenly serene. 14,000 feet up on that mountain, the brilliance of the snow, reflecting the sun, just overwhelmed me. As I looked round about, these busy cities and towns, as they appeared, were just about that small. Brother, you say, what's the point? You see, experiences with Christ, according to Ephesians 2, we have been seated with him in the heavenlies. Oh, tell me, do you ever spend time in this busy lifetime with God alone on the mountaintop? Come on, dear. Do you? Things of time and sense will become exceedingly small, very small. Ever wonder why the Savior only took 3 up to the mountain? You see, he did have an intimate circle of fellowship. He's sovereign in his choosing his own. Peter, James, and John are always seen in close association with Christ. The other group of disciples formed another circle of fellowship. They were all positionally the same basis and the same level, we know that. And then came the 70s, the 70 and so on. From Mount Hermon, from that lofty mountain, you can see the land of Syria as far as Damascus. From that lofty mountain you can see the borders of Jordan. From that lofty mountain you can see the whole panorama of the land of Israel. And if you had a pair of binoculars, from that lofty mountain you can see as far as the Mediterranean Sea, the place of economy and trade. That simply means as you're with the Christ of God at the mountaintop, you pass all the political systems. You enjoy the serene presence of the Son of God as he moved through life. Oh, brethren, what is more wonderful? Psalm 133, the fellowship that the writer talks about. Like the precious ointment flowing down Aaron's beard, even to his garments, oh, the fragrance of it. Dear young people, if I could only impress you to go in for that which spiritual rich, that which really satisfies. We live in a tremendous busy time. Oh, life has its demands. I dare say, if you want to have time to spend with your God, you have to take time. You know, some young people in certain places, they come to conference, they don't even bring their Bible. Glad to see you young boys and girls with the scriptures. Glad that you see a number of open Bibles. Some young believers don't even come bring their book. What's that? Spend time with the Christ of God on the mountaintop. The mountain in relation to elevation. Elevation. The mountain in relation to transfiguration. You know, when I was a little boy, my parents took me to the movies. I was only 5, 6 years old. And as I looked into the movies, still movies, my mind was captured by the mysterious and things that pertain to fables and the world of make-believe. I still remember seeing a movie where, you know, a little angelic being with a silver staff. And everything that young, this little angelic being touched, turned to gold. All was changed. We call it pixie dust. What impressive. My eyes nearly popped out when one day this little pixie in the movie flew over to an ugly frog and turned him into a beautiful prince. Huh? Where did we get that stuff from?
Ah, brother. This is no pixie dust. Oh, I would have given anything to have been there.
As on the mountain top, the Christ of God was transfigured. His garment shining, contrasted no doubt with the snow. His face above or like the brightness of the sun. A mountain of transfiguration. And so impressive was that sight, that Peter experimentally never forgot it till the end of his days. It infused spiritual strength and conviction, which in the last hours of a life he needed in a time of crisis. That wasn't he for the Bible reading. No doubt our brethren on Friday morning and afternoon pointed out, didn't they, that Peter's first epistle, or rather the second epistle, pardon me, stands under the shadow of the knowledge that the servant's going to die. The death of Peter lends pathos and weight and significance to all he writes. For you see, Peter's going to go. Peter's death, like Paul, was a terrible, cruel execution. But none of these dear servants talked about it as an execution. When Peter knew he was going, he said, it's the time of my exodus. Oh, that's good. You see what an exodus is? The period of servitude and bondage is over. God will bring you into a new country. That's Peter's idea of dying. An interesting love, dear brother. Nowhere in the New Testament is the death of a believer spoken of as such. That's very encouraging. For you see, death has the element of finality. Death has the idea of being irrevocable. Nowhere in the New Testament, and death is no tragedy. Nowhere in the New Testament is death looked upon as such. Paul speaks about the departure. Paul in 1 Corinthians speaks about sowing. That's an agricultural term. You're looking forward. After all, springtime has almost come and gone. You prepare the ground, you cast in the seed, you cover it, and God must act next in creatorial power. Come to the cemetery for a little while. Every once in a while we put to rest, as we say, our brethren and sisters. We can cover the ground. That's as far as we can go. And as in agricultural terms, Paul says, it is sown in dishonor. The next thing is, God is going to act in creatorial power and resurrection. You see, sowing is looking forward. Paul also uses the concept of being asleep, which is looking backwards. And here Peter is just about to go. And he never forgot what he saw on the Mount of Transfiguration. You see, brother, a sight like this, you'll never forget. How could you? In fact, Peter used such words, majestic, impressive, overwhelming. He says, we have not followed cunningly devised trick. No, brother, this is real. This is no pixie dust. This is real. The Christ of God seen in his glory. Peter says, there came a voice. He doesn't say such a thing. He says, there came such a voice. He never forgot the voice. It left a deep, lasting impression upon the man that he carried all through life. Such a voice from heaven. We have not followed cunningly devised fables. Such a voice. We were eyewitnesses of his glory. And what Peter saw that day transformed not only everything around about him. You see, this is why Peter speaks about the holy mountain. Nothing about the ground being holy, it's relative. It's because of the presence of Christ. But as far as Peter is concerned, it transformed everything. Oh, dear brethren, has the sight of the Christ crucified, buried, and risen, come on now, has it transfigured your life? Has it? You know, I'm amazed sometimes how little it takes to take some saints away from God. The least little thing, and they're gone. You ever wonder why it is that some people have such a struggle to go on for Christ? Why is it such have such terrible conflict? I have my own solutions. On the other hand, can you explain why some saints go on with undeviating purpose, just as solid as a rock? They go on. They weather the storm. They weather offenses, disappointments, setbacks. Can you explain it? Oh, brethren, one thing that will help us is envision experiences with Christ and a vision of a glorified Christ. As he stood in that dignity on the mountain that day, it transfigured everything about Peter. You'll never be the same. The mountain in relation to transfiguration. But finally, the mountain in relation to communication, especially verification. You know, when I first read the account, I was thrilled. I'm still thrilled as I read the account of the transfiguration. Come on, brother, do you believe it? Well, I challenge you, young people. Do you really believe it? What took place? Moses. Oh, interesting. The man had gone 1,500 years. You see what's in this. Way yonder in Exodus, God gave Moses one of the first commissions. He says, Moses, all the thrill of it. He says, he identifies himself. He says, after Moses inquired, Who art thou? I am the God, notice, present tense, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Oh, that's interesting. These patriarchs had been dead for centuries. God brought before Moses the fact that he is a God of power and resurrection. Oh, wonders, brethren. You see, you're associated with a Christ who has solved mankind's deepest problems, tackled sin, conquered death. Oh, yes. So here's Peter, quoting his experience. Moses receives from God, he says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That is, he is the God of the living. They were not dead. He is their God right now and then. Well, that's interesting. And now, here's Moses, and he appeared with Elijah. What joy I convey to you. Oh, brethren, the Old Testament, oh, let this sink down in that heart of yours. I say this to strengthen you. The Old Testament is true. All the promises of God are true. Come on. Does the devil sometimes make you doubt in relation to the spiritual realities? You're talking about conflict. You're not exempt. Oh, no, you're not exempt. And ultimately, every one of us, we're going to see Christ. Brother, I'm looking forward to that moment. And when we see the Savior, we have not any confirmation, affirmation, but verification that all He is and all He claims to do, that the gospel you and I preach is truth after all. Come on, is it true to you? Is it? Therefore, Paul, writing to the Corinthians, he says, wherefore, be steadfast, unmoved, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain. The holy mountain in relation to verification. Oh, brother, let's go in. The last few months or years, I'm not setting dates. I forgot about the mount of dispensation.
That's amazing, Matthew
gives you a time element after 6 days. That's interesting. Mark doesn't do it. Oh, yeah, the Mark does, but not Luke. You see, Luke compiles his gospel by eyewitnesses. And these people likely forgot. So Luke says, about 8 days. Matthew is a kingdom gospel. Matthew, the gospel of the king. And oh, how significant. Matthew says, after 6 days. It pleases God to work in sevens. I'm not too much concerned about signs in relation to the rapture. But I'm definitely deeply concerned because the Bible gives you plenty of signs in relation to the kingdom. Matthew 24. Oh, the thrill, Daniel says, in the days of these 10 kings, will the God of heaven set up a kingdom, brother, and the hour is late. Promises of God are coming to fruition. The time element in relation to the triumph of our Savior. Be unmoved, abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as we know that our labor will never